ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam 8th Canto, Chapter 22, Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. Kim atmanane na jahati yon tata.
Kim atmanane na jahati yon tata.
Kim rikta harai swajanakya dasyubihi.
Kim rikta harai swajanakya dasyubihi.
Kim jayaya samriti hetu bhutaya.
Kim jayaya samriti hetu bhutaya.
Matyasya gehai ke mahayu sovyaya.
Matyasya gehai ke mahayu sovyaya.
Kim atmanane na jahati yom tata.
Kim atmanane na jahati yom tata.
Kim rik Rikta hare swajanakya dasyubi.
Kim rikta hare swajanakya dasyubi.
Kim jayaya samsriti hetu bhutaya.
Kim jayaya samsriti hetu bhutaya.
Matyasya gehai ke mahayu sovyaya.
Matyasya gehai ke mahayu sovyaya.
Kim atmanane na jahati yom tata.
Kim
rikta hare swajanakya dasyubhi.
Kim rikta hare swajanakya dasyubhi.
Kim jayaya samsriti hetu bhutaya.
Kim jayaya samsriti hetu bhutaya.
Matyasya gehai ke mahayu sovyaya.
Matyasya gehai ke mahayu sovyaya.
What is the use?
What is the use?
Atmana anena.
Atmana anena.
Of this body.
Of this body.
Jahati.
Jahati.
Gives up.
Gives up.
Ya.
Ya.
Which?
Which?
Body.
Body.
Antata.
Antata.
At the end of life.
At the end of life.
Kim.
Kim.
What is the use?
What is the use?
Riktahai.
Riktahai.
The plunderers of wealth.
The plunderers of wealth.
Swajana Asya Dasyubi.
Swajana Asya Dasyubi.
They who are actually plunderers.
They who are actually plunderers.
But who pass by the name of relatives.
Kim. Kim.
What is the use?
What is the use?
Jayaya.
Jayaya.
Of a wife.
Of a wife.
Samsriti Hetu Bhutaya.
Samsriti Hetu Bhutaya.
Who is the source of increasing material conditions?
Who is the source of increasing
material
conditions? Matyasya.
Of a person sure to die.
Of a person sure to die.
Gehai.
Gehai.
Of houses, family, and community.
Of houses, family, and community.
Kim.
Kim.
What is the use?
What is the use?
Eha.
Eha.
In which house?
In which house?
Ayusha.
Ayusha.
Of the duration of life.
Of the duration of life.
Vyaya.
Yeah.
Simply wasting. Translation. This is Bali Maharaj speaking after he's been after the whole universe has been taken away from him by Lord Vamanadeva, the three steps. And now Bali Maharaj is being humiliated. He's been arrested by the ropes of Varuna. Very painful situation. Bound up, arrested, humiliated, lost the whole universe. Now he is surrendering. These are his statements. What is the use of the material body, which automatically leaves its owner at the end of life? And what is the use of all one's family members, who are actually plunderers, taking away money that is useful for the service of the Lord in spiritual opulence? What is the use of a wife? She is only the source of increasing material conditions. And what is the use of family, home, country, and community? Attachment for them merely wastes the valuable energy of one's lifetime. Purport. A long purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, advises, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mam Ekam Saranam Vraja. Give up all other varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. The common man does not appreciate such a statement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he thinks that during his lifetime, his family, society, country, body, and relatives are everything. Why should one give up any of them and take shelter of a Supreme Personality of Godhead? But from the behavior of great personalities like Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, we understand that surrendering to the Lord is the right action for an intelligent person. Prahlad Maharaj took shelter of Vishnu against the will of his father. Similarly, Bali Maharaj took shelter of Vamanadeva against the will of his spiritual master, Shukracharya, and all the leading demons. People may be surprised that devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj could seek shelter of the side of the enemy, giving up the natural affinity for family, hearth, and home. In this connection, Bali Maharaj explains that the body, which is the center of all material activities, is also a foreign element. Even though we want to keep the body fit and helpful to our activities, the body cannot continue eternally. Although I am the soul, which is eternal, after using the body for some time, I have to accept another body. Tata dehantara prapti, according to the laws of nature, unless I render some service with the body for advancement in devotional service. One should not use the body for any other purpose. One must know that if he uses the body for any other purpose, he is simply wasting time, for as soon as the time is ripe, the soul will automatically leave the body. We are very interested in society, friendship, and love. But what are they? Those in the garb of friends and relatives merely plunder the hard-earned money of the bewildered soul. Everyone is affectionate toward his wife and is attached to her. But what is this wife? The wife is called Stri, which means one who expands the material condition. If a person lives without a wife, his material conditions are less extensive. As soon as one marries and is connected with a wife, his material necessities increase. Pumsastya mituni bhavametang tiyomito hridaya grantam ahu ato griha secha sutapta vitaya janasya mohoyam ahang mameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 5, Verse 8. Human life is meant for self-realization, not for increasing unwanted things. Actually, a wife increases unwanted things. One's lifetime, one's home, and everything one has, if not properly used in the service of the Lord, are all sources of material conditions of perpetual suffering under the threefold miseries, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, and adhidaivika. Unfortunately, there is no institution in human society for education on this subject. People are kept in darkness about the goal of life, and thus there is a continuous struggle for existence. We speak of survival of the fittest, but no one survives, for no one is free under material conditions. Om Agyanat Timanandasya Yananjanat Shalakaya Chakshum Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Bali Maharaj is certainly entitled to give these kind of realizations because he had possessed the entire universe, all three planetary systems, and in a moment he lost it. We cannot conceive of what kind of attachment you'll feel if you control the whole universe. Nor can we conceive of the state of mind that a normal person would have upon losing the entire universe in a moment. One moment you think, Who is this wonderful Brahmana boy? I shall give him some charity. My dear Brahmana boy, what do you want? Ask me whatever you like. I am a famous Kshatriya, famous warrior, administrator. My whole family is famous for giving charity endlessly to the Brahmins. Ask of me whatever you like. I shall give it. Gold? Villages? Some wives? Whatever. No problem. So, the little Brahmana boy, known as Vamanadeva, because he's a dwarf. Krishna appearing as a dwarf. Krishna's always having fun. Yesterday, or a few days ago, at Pio's place, we were discussing Krishna playing games by fleeing the battle as Ranchor. And then Krishna playing romance by capturing Rukmini. Now, we're hearing about Krishna doing what? Krishna cheating. He cheated Bali Maharaj. Straight out cheated him. And what is Bali Maharaj's reaction? If Krishna wants to cheat, all glories. Whatever Krishna does, whether he dances, fights, runs away from battles, fights in battles, wrestles, Krishna is all good, the supreme. This teaches us we should never make material discrimination between the Lord's pastimes. These are good pastimes. These are not so good pastimes. These are attractive pastimes. Oh, the Rasa Leela. These are not so attractive pastimes. So, Brahmana Dev, dwarf Brahmana pastimes. Now, one who is actually Krishna conscious relishes everything the Lord does and does not make these discriminations. So, Krishna came as Vamanadeva, the beautiful young dwarf Brahmana boy, just to cheat Bali Maharaj, to enjoy cheating. That's why in this world there's some perverted tiny pleasure in cheating. Because Krishna also has that propensity. But when you cheat in this world, you cause pain for others and pain for yourself. But when Krishna cheats, he causes bliss and knowledge for others. So since your cheating can't do that, then there's no point in doing it. But whatever Krishna does, even when he kills, what happened on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Of course, Krishna did not directly participate in that battle. He had said, I will not fight in this war. Why? Because it was a family war. Krishna had relations on both sides. So Krishna said, I won't fight. You can either take my army, or you can take me as a chariot driver, but I'm not fighting. I'm not getting involved in this. Ah, Krishna's being a bit tricky there, because actually Krishna caused the whole battle. It's like if you make a huge commotion and then say, I'm not getting involved in it. So, Krishna had arranged that all the kings of the whole world show up at Kurukshetra. Why? To wipe them out. Because they weren't ruling properly. Krishna wanted to wipe them all out and put his man in charge. Now, some people think that the battle of Kurukshetra was a holy war, and that when we distribute Bhagavad Gita, we're advocating a holy war. No. Prabhupada explains there's nothing about a holy war. Battle of Kurukshetra had nothing to do with a holy war. So it was pure politics, and Krishna was manipulating. So, how dare Krishna do that? Manipulate in politics. Everything's Krishna's energy. Whether he's manipulating some demon by killing him, or whether he's arranging for his Rasa dance, or arranging for the battle of Kurukshetra, it's all Krishna's. Just like we're hearing about Krishna and Rukmini, how Krishna stole her away from Shishupal. Everything belongs to Krishna, not only Rukmini, but also Shishupal. Of course, Rukmini, she's special. She's the plenary portion of Srimati Radharani. Just as Krishna expands himself into Vishnu Tattva, Srimati Radharani expands herself into other goddesses of fortune. So, Krishna stealing Rukmini means he's simply taking what belongs to him and enjoying getting it. All Krishna's pastimes are just different ways for him to enjoy himself. Everything already belongs to him. But to have fun, he does all these things. So the battle of Kurukshetra, that was Krishna's arrangement, how to rid the world of demoniac power and put Yudhisthira, his man, in charge, followed by Prichit Maharaj. the last two or three kings before Kali Yuga came in. So, that is Krishna doing one thing. Now you may say, okay, he didn't fight, but he arranged this whole battle in which millions of warriors and soldiers and kings died. He was there, therefore he's responsible. And he's speaking this book, Bhagavad Gita, telling Arjuna to fight. Arjuna was right. Why should Arjuna want to fight? Fighting is always bad. No, Krishna is showing you that everything has its perfect use, even fighting. So, still if you want to make judgment on Krishna, you caused this huge war, you were there, you didn't stop it. In fact, you ordered Arjuna to fight, and you left a book behind for generations after generations telling people to kill their relatives, kill their teachers. What happened to everyone who died on the battlefield of the Kurukshetra? They all went back to Godhead. Now how does that compare to the so-called holy wars fought by so-called religious people of the modern age, whether it's the Crusades or the Jihad? How does that compare? It's not simply that those who are on Krishna's side went back to Godhead. Anyone who died on the battlefield, they went back to Godhead. That is Krishna's mercy. So, whatever the Lord does is all auspicious. Even if you want to accuse him of causing warfare, everyone got the highest benefit. Just like if you want to accuse Krishna of being lusty, taking away Rukmini, then you must accuse him of being unlimitedly lusty. Why only 16,108 wives? Why did he limit himself? That should be the question, not what kind of God is this? Hindu love God? Capturing women. No, your question should be, why only one? Then you can understand Krishna. So, here Krishna is at it again, this time as a young Brahmana boy, cheating. Cheating a man, a king who actually, honestly, wanted to give charity. Bali Maharaj thought, I am such a powerful ruler. I have defeated the demigods. I'm controlling the whole universe. We get so proud if we can just control a little something for Krishna. A little service in the temple, or a little building, or some tracts of land, or something like that. If we can even control our family, if we can control our husband or wife, we feel so good about it. Bali Maharaj controlled the whole universe, took it away from the demigods. Very proudly was ready to give charity to this attractive Brahmana boy, who looked like the sun rising nearby. That's how effulgent of Brahmana Dev was. So, he said, you may ask for me whatever you like. I can give it. My family is famous for this. No Brahmana has ever gone disappointed from me. So, Brahmana Dev said, I'll just take 3 steps of land. Bali Maharaj said, aha, what is this? You're obviously just a young, inexperienced Brahmana boy. You don't know how to ask for charity. You don't know how to receive charity. You just want 3 steps of land? I can give you so much. Oh, you're just not wise yet. Then Brahmana Dev replied very ominously, someone who is not satisfied with 3 steps of land won't be satisfied even if he possesses the whole universe. And then Brahmana Dev spoke a few shlokas, a few verses about how greed ruins everyone. So, Brahmana Dev took his first 2 steps, and with just 2 steps, he covered the whole universe. Had no place for his 3rd step. So Bali Maharaj, in his total astonishment, said, all right, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You please put your 3rd step on my head. Bali Maharaj is thinking, the possessor of the wealth is more valuable than the wealth itself, so let him put his foot on my head. And this way, Bali Maharaj surrendered everything. But the show wasn't over. Krishna humiliated him completely. Had him bound up, arrested, sent down with his soldiers to the lower planets. Very excruciating situation. All for Krishna's pleasure. And Bhavi Maharaj knew it. So his attitude, as Prabhupada writes in the earlier purport, his attitude was, if Krishna wants to enjoy in this way, let him do it. This is what it means to surrender. However Krishna wants to enjoy, we just want to help that. Even at the so-called expense of our body, our family, our land, our nation, it's not ours anyway. We just imagine it's at the expense of this, it's at the expense of that. But if you follow Krishna's instruction, then there's no question of it being at the expense of something, because all those somethings belong to Krishna. So that takes intelligence, how to use everything properly in the Lord's service. We don't want to be irresponsible. On the other hand, we don't want to be greedy and assuming false proprietorship. That is why Krishna consciousness takes guidance. Living in the material world is a very complicated affair. Bhakti yoga means the art of how to live in this world without becoming contaminated. So on the one hand, we have the dangers of material attachment, false proprietorship, trying to be the enjoyer. On the other hand, we have the dangers of artificial renunciation, not using things properly in Krishna's service, saying, oh, it's just all material, it's all matter, I'm beyond all that. Both sides are condemned. This is why Krishna consciousness is for the most intelligent persons. And this is why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, you need guidance how to get your way through all these difficulties in understanding. Therefore, Krishna told Arjuna, if you want to know the truth all about proper renunciation, if you want to know the truth about using everything in my service, then you must have help. You must have guidance. That is Krishna's system. So, Bali Maharaj, he's now becoming the prime example of surrendering everything to Krishna, Atmanivedanam. You know that there are 9 processes of devotional service. It's not that the things we do in Krishna consciousness are just some whimsical activities. No. There are 9 basic processes of devotional service, and everything we do has been organized by the acharyas around these 9 activities. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. This is all we want to do. And one who is always absorbed in these 9 activities of devotional service can remain free from material contamination. Each of these 9 processes of bhakti yoga has a prime example or model. Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshit Abhava Vyasaki Kirtane. Sukadev Goswami, known as Vyasaki, the son of Vyasadeva, he showed the perfection of reciting about Krishna, kirtan. And Parikshit Maharaj showed the perfection of hearing about Krishna. Smaranam, remembering, that's Prahlad Maharaj. In any circumstance, Prahlad Maharaj always remembered the Lord, even when terrorized by his own father. Padasevanam, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, she's always worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, massaging him. Archanam, Prithu Maharaj, performed gorgeous deity worship of the Lord, so much so that the Lord appeared in his kingdom. The 4 Kumaras appeared. Vandanam, Akura, recited very wonderful prayers to the Lord. You can read that in the Krishna book. For a devotee, it is recommended that you learn the prayers of the great devotees and recite them, not that you kind of just make up your own prayers. Our process is Mahajana Yena Gata Sapanta, following the footsteps of the great predecessors. So in offering prayers to the Lord, we are instructed that it's very pleasing to the Lord if we recite the prayers of the great devotees. If you learn prayers, whether they're the prayers by Queen Kunti or the prayers by Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Nrisimhadeva, there's so much philosophy in them, and of course, the perfection of bhakti is there. They're not just, you'll notice, the prayers in the Bhagavatam are not just some kind of sentimental, oh God, we love you. Oh God, we praise you. That is better than nothing. But real spiritual science has knowledge. And in the prayers of the Lord, in the prayers to the Lord, you will find the perfection of love and devotion evidenced by the perfection of knowledge. In other words, if you really love someone, you'll have knowledge of that person. People have a hard time understanding that point. Well, I love God. They know nothing about God. This was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's point. Excuse me. This was Gopinath Acharya's point to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. That knowledge of the Lord is proof that you have some of the mercy of the Lord. What's the use of saying, I love God? Just like on the American dollar, it's stated, in God we trust. No one knows anything about God. What to speak of trusting Him? How do you trust Him when you don't know? So, it's nice that people want to say, I love God, I love the Lord. But the real proof that you have love of God is that you know. You know about the Lord. So in the prayers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find perfect devotion as evidenced by perfect knowledge of the Lord. Nothing is vague. Nothing is left up to imagination. You can learn so much, not only about a proper loving mood, but also about the Lord Himself, just by studying those prayers and offering them to the Lord. Therefore, especially for new devotees, it's very good. Start off your career in Krishna consciousness, learning some prayers. I remember, I think the first prayer I learned, which was very related to my situation when I became a new devotee, it was, I think, a prayer by Rupa Goswami. It was in Nectar of Devotion. My dear Lord, I know young boys have attraction to young girls, and young girls have attraction to young boys. I'm simply praying to you, Lord, that my attraction may flow to you in the same spontaneous way. That was the first prayer I learned. It worked. So you take some prayers. Prayers by Queen Kunti. Sometimes people say, oh, Krishna consciousness is a masculine movement. It's a masculine process. Actually, the prayers in the Bhagavatam that Prabhupada lectured on the most, Queen Kunti, her prayers are amongst the two or three he lectured on the most. Prayers by a woman, Queen Kunti. The other he lectured on the most, prayers by a young boy, Prahlad Maharaj. So, we can enrich our life very much by studying and learning these prayers and offering them to the deity. Why did you think the deity is stone or some mysterious object up there on the altar? Learn some prayers, recite them for the pleasure of the deity. That's a very pleasing service. So, Bali Maharaj, he's setting an example. What are we up to? Akura, Vandanam, offering prayers. Dasyam, Hanuman, the servant, executed the desire of Lord Ramchandra. Even using his tail in the service of the Lord. Hanuman, the monkey devotee, engaged everything in the Lord's service, even his tail. Ravana, the demon, and his cohorts had set Hanuman's tail on fire. So Hanuman showed, I'm not a false renunciate. I can use everything in Krishna's service, even my burning tail. So he took his tail and he set the whole city of Lanka on fire. Satyam, Arjuna, the friend of Krishna. Krishna says plainly in Bhagavad Gita, Saevayam Maya Chaja Yoga Prokta Puratana Bhaktosi Me Sakacheti Prahasyam Hetarutamam. Arjuna, I'm telling you this mystery of bhakti, this mystery of the relationship between the soul and the supreme soul. I'm going to explain it to you because you are my devotee, my bhakta, as well as my friend, my sakha. Therefore, you can understand. So if you're wondering why so many people cannot understand Bhagavad Gita, it's because they have not taken up the process to become Krishna's friend or devotee. They must follow in the footsteps of Arjuna. Then they can begin to understand Bhagavad Gita, and understanding Bhagavad Gita means you're beginning to understand Krishna. And then the final one, Atmanivedanam, surrendering everything to the Lord. That process of devotional service is shown by Bali Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada has commented that generally the first seven processes you can see, but the last two, very rare to be seen. Satyam, friendship for the Lord, and Atmanivedanam, surrendering everything. So now we're right in the midst of Bali Maharaj surrendering everything. This is the value of coming to Bhagavatam class. Of course, many times our householders, they're busy trying to maintain their families, and so they should have some kind of program at home. Otherwise, things can get very mundane and one can feel overwhelmed. There should be a time in the day when anyone, whether you live in the temple or not, can sit down and recite prayers to the Lord and read Srimad Bhagavatam. That firm foundation should be there. So, you're right in the midst of Bali Maharaj surrendering everything. Srila Prabhupada's put you right in the midst with very wonderful purports. Now, Bali Maharaj, it sounds like he's speaking very negatively. What is the use of the material body? Just think about that. What's the use of the material body? Well, we can think of a lot of uses for the material body. And that is our problem. We are so attached to acting with the material body that we do not understand our original spiritual existence. And we have fear. We fear Krishna and we fear devotional service because we think, without using my body for sense gratification, what will become of me? It's so natural. The senses, the sense objects. We've explained before Uddhava's question to the Lord in the 11th canto. My dear Lord Krishna, this relationship between the senses and the sense objects is so spontaneous. The senses are racing towards the sense objects. The sense objects have, practically speaking, entered into the mind. The mind's racing toward the sense objects. The sense objects are embedded in the mind. How can there ever be self-realization as long as this is going on? What to do about this? Because we take material activities, that means the material body and its senses, so seriously, we are very fearful. If I don't do this, what will become of me? Of course, we give many other excuses why we cannot become Krishna conscious, but that's basically the real reason. We may say it's because of this, it's because of that. I was talking with one of our candidates here, and they were telling me it's because, well, maybe there are problems with the institution, because maybe there's problems with the organization. We know what the real problem is. We are afraid of what we might lose if we give up sense gratification. When it's time to have sense gratification, no one says, oh, how's the institution doing? Before I have sense gratification, can you tell me, any problems with the organization? No, you just take to it like, you know, I am in a magnet. But when it comes time to surrender to Krishna, what about the organization? This shows how bogus we are. So, spiritual life comes down to, basically, what are you going to do with your body? And the body means senses. Are you going to engage them in the service of the Lord, or are you not? And our problem comes from fear, based on attachment. I'm so attached to this body, and if I give up sense gratification, what will become of me? Where will the pleasure be? So we need to hear Bali Maharaj explaining, what's the use of this material body? It automatically leaves you at the end of life. Or as Prahlad Maharaj explains in the seventh canto, the material body embraces you and then leaves you aside. So you like to focus simply on the embrace and forget that you're going to be left aside by it. This is animal life. We cannot see, we don't want to see the full picture of what's going on. We just want to focus on part of the reality and avoid the unpalatable part. Called Palgu Vairagya. It looks like you're being renounced, but actually you've missed the point. And actually, not only have you missed the point in failing to grasp how to use things in Krishna's service, but you've also still have desire to enjoy, although you're going through all the motions of being detached. You see, unless you use things in Krishna's service, you must be falsely detached. I remember one Buddhist monk I know in Thailand. He's a Westerner who, for years, practicing meditation in the, you know, the outback in Thailand. So, just living in a very small place, eating practically nothing, and just concentrating on the breath. That's all. Just the ingoing breath, the outgoing breath. Pretty dry, but detaching yourself from all material attachment. So, just every day. No matter how hot it was, it gets burning hot in Thailand, mosquitoes bite, you get sick with malaria. Every day, just sitting in his little hut or cell, just meditating on the incoming breath, the outgoing breath, separating yourself from all emotions, all states of mind, all physiological, psychological feelings. It is a fact. You'll start to be able to see it clearly. It is a fact. The Buddhist meditation, it's called Vipassana. By meditating on your breath, you get to see all the different mental states that bind you. That's true. But then what are you going to do? Now that you know that there are such things as these mental states of attachment, what are you going to do about it? That Buddha didn't teach you. So, anyway, there he is, breathing in and out year after year. And he said, one day, in the middle of the jungle, some person rode by with an old transistor radio, and out of the radio came blaring a song from his youth, from the 50s. Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. And he said, tears just came down out of his eyes. He just started crying. He just got overwhelmed by the sentiments of this song. Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. And he couldn't understand why that happened. So I explained to him that, you know, you've been detached. That's very nice. But you haven't gotten to the root problem of desire to enjoy and want to have a loving exchange. So you became so dry that somebody drove by on a bicycle playing a sentimental song from the 50s, and you immediately started crying after years of meditation in the forest. So in Krishna consciousness, we deal with all these things. We say, all right, you want a relationship with the opposite sex? Then you get yourself married and you have a family that exists for Krishna's pleasure. We point out, marriage means work. You want to get married? It's not that the Krishna conscious movement serves up a nice young man, young girl on a platter. Okay, here it is, get it while it's hot. No, you've got to get a job. Where's the buck? I was discussing with Pio and Chichileka a few things my mother taught me that I remember. One of them, I don't know why she was telling me this as a young boy, 5 years old. She said, always remember, romance without finance is a nuisance. And if you read Prabhupada's original instructions to those who are getting married, he wrote, oh, you want to get married? That's nice, but are you ready to get a job? Are you ready to live outside the temple and provide for a family? Are you ready for this? So, it is a fact that attraction between male and female is the basis of material existence. Rishabhdev, Lord Rishabhdev has explained that point. It's there in the fifth canto. It's there in this purport too, that verse. Nevertheless, you can see that most persons, they have to deal with this attraction in an authorized way. But they should know that dealing with it means work. You have to work to support the family, and you have to work at the relationship. What is the use of all that effort to support a family and you're working to iron out the inevitable marital difficulties? What is the use if Krishna is not in the center? So, we want Krishna-conscious grihasthas, but we should realize it's not that anyone who is married is automatically a grihastha. Grihastha is a very exalted status of life. Not so easy in Kali Yuga. We want them. Of course, if someone can avoid that, then there's no doubt you're having a much simple life, and things can go much easier for you in your spiritual development if you can just tolerate one certain department. That was Prahlad Maharaj's instruction. Tolerate the itch and avoid so much suffering. Nevertheless, Krishna consciousness is so rich and profound that it contains instructions on how all kinds of persons can make spiritual advancement. And that's what we're looking for. The important thing is how you are using everything for Krishna's pleasure. Ashram means a place, a fortress of spiritual cultivation. So we want to see how the spiritual cultivation is going on. We don't simply glorify detachment. Oh, you're not having, you're not doing. We want to know, well, what are you having or what are you doing? Are you having Krishna? Are you serving Krishna? That is the important thing. Therefore, in any ashram, you can be exemplary. Two things go together. You see, sometimes Krishna consciousness is a bit difficult to understand because you can go to one extreme or the other. It is a fact that you can give pleasure to Krishna from any status of life. But it's also a fact that certain conditions are easier. But anyway, whether one is taking the easy way or, like many, you take the way that requires a bit of adjustment, consideration, austerity, how to deal with worldly concerns and maintaining a family at the same time, how to go back to Godhead. If one's taking that way, still, regardless, you can please Krishna. So that is our consideration. Is Krishna being pleased? Bali Maharaj is showing one side of it. And we all should study that side. It's not that we ignore these verses. He's realized he's a family man who controls the whole universe. We shouldn't just brush aside his verses. Oh, he's being negative. He knows what he's talking about. He's speaking from realization. He's letting us know that we must use everything in Krishna's service. Otherwise, we are victimized by these temporary things. Whether they're our body, these temporary things, or whether they're our family, our home, whatever. It's a great struggle in this world, how to use everything for Krishna's pleasure. And that's what we want to focus on, how everything is being used for Krishna's pleasure. He says, what is the use of family, home, country, and community? You see, without the body, you will not be interested in things connected to the body. But because of attachment to the body, then family, home, country, and community appear important. All based on the body. So you deal with the problem at the root. You end your attachment for the body, and automatically your attachment for all these other things ends. So we don't shy away from that point. How do we end our attachments? By simply acting for Krishna's pleasure. That is real renunciation. In India, I think near Gaya, there's this river called the Falgu River. And it helps you to understand what is Falgu Vairagya, false renunciation. The Falgu River, it looks like it's just sand, dry sand. But if you stick your hand deep under the surface, scoop your hand deep under the surface of the dry sand of the riverbed, you find water. So Falgu Vairagya, Prabhupada gave this example, means that you seem to be so detached. Not this, not that, not this, not that, not the other either. But actually, because you don't know the art of how to use everything for Krishna's service, you still have the enjoying tendency underneath the surface, just a bit lurking. So our temples are places where people can learn how to use everything for Krishna's pleasure. And we need exemplary souls of all types. We need Grihastha Mahatmas. We need Brahmachari, Brahmacharini Mahatmas to demonstrate to the people how to live for Krishna's pleasure. That is the important thing. Bali Maharaj, he's a realized soul. He's pointing out, you're going to have to leave your body one day. You're going to have to leave your family, leave your society. But nevertheless, it is true. While you have these things, and you should keep it simple, the less we have of these things, the better. There is no doubt, we cannot hide from that point. The less we have of those things, the easier it is to engage in Krishna's service. Nevertheless, according to whatever prescription of medicine is good for our spiritual development, we should understand that these temporary things that I have, let me make sure Krishna is the enjoyer of them. It's a fact. What's the use of a wife who is only the source of increasing material conditions? One should not have that kind of wife. But a wife who encourages the husband, serve Krishna more, I'm going to make it easier for you to serve Krishna. And vice versa, a husband who encourages the wife, I'm going to make it easier for you to serve Krishna. That has great value in Krishna consciousness. But even the best arrangements like that, still they're temporary. We come into this world with nothing and we leave with nothing. So some will understand that right away. If I'm going to have to give it up sooner or later, why don't I give it up now? That is the truth. But we have to be a bit sober about that. If you can actually understand that point, then you can save yourself quite a bit of inconvenience. But at the same time, if we don't really understand that point, then we try to make an arrangement by which we can participate in family life while making progress to the ultimate goal of life. It is very important to understand we're meant to go back to Godhead. Sometimes we've forgotten this point. You know, back to Godhead? We're not meant to stay here. It's a bit, maybe a bit controversial these days, but we're not meant to stay here. We're not meant to develop here. We're meant to go back to Godhead. What does Prahlad Maharaj say? Nate vadu swarthi katimi Vishnu. The materialists, they don't know the goal of life is to go back to Godhead, back to Vishnu. So we're supposed to know that. So all our living arrangements are meant to contribute for that purpose. That is the fact. And we want to inspire one another in that way. And we want to make our temple, whether we live in it or live around it or live a half hour away, we want to make our temple a place where people can come and think, I'm supposed to go back to Godhead. That is a real temple. They come here and they become immediately overwhelmed with the real goal of human life. I don't belong in this world. I meant to go back to Godhead. And this place reminded me, and all the people here have reminded me, whether they live here or live a half hour away, when I'm around them, they make me realize I meant to go back to Godhead. Then you have a very happy temple. It is true Maya is so strong. Just like Rukmini. We were talking about Rukmini and Krishna. Even Rukmini was playing the role of being deluded. What happened when Krishna was about to kill her brother, Rukmini, with a sword? She fell down at Krishna's lotus feet, grabbed them. Yogeshvara, master of all mystic power. Jagatpati, lord of the universe. Aprameya, O immeasurable one. Deva Deva, lord of lords. Don't kill him. He's my brother. So, immediately Balaram showed up after having wiped out all the forces of Shishubal and Rukmini. Balaram showed up. And first, Balaram, just to pacify Rukmini, criticized Krishna. Krishna, how could you do this? you're marrying Rukmini, that means Rukmi, he's now your brother. Krishna, this is not in line with our family traditions. We don't do this to people. Then he turned to Rukmini and said, why are you lamenting so much about Rukmi's condition? He caused so much pain to others. What kind of person are you to lament for someone who's caused pain to others? He's getting his just due by the laws of nature. Then he turned to Krishna and said, Krishna, even if a family member does something abominable, you don't kill him. Just the fact, his shame of having done such a thing, that's enough. But then Balaram turned to Rukmini and explained to her, you're simply identifying with the body. He explained it to her in two ways. Number one, Krishna's a Kshatriya, Rukmini's a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas, when they fight, they're not supposed to consider, this one's my brother. They're supposed to do their duty. Number two, we are spirit soul, we're not the body. Why are you identifying as the sister of Rukmi? This is bodily attachment. The body is a foreign thing. This is Balaram's instructions to Rukmi. The body is a foreign thing. Now, how many of us feel like our body is a foreign thing? No, the body is so nice. It's our instrument for expressing ourselves. And the materialist will tell you the body is the mechanism of love. No, Balaram says the body is a foreign thing. And he gives two examples from nature. People like nature so much these days. There are many wonderful nature examples in the Bhagavatam, Krishna book. Balaram said, look at the sun. When the sun rises on the eastern hemisphere and moves to the west, first it lights up the east. And then it leaves the east, and everything becomes dark, and then it lights up the west. Similarly, the soul goes from one body to another. While the soul is in one body, that body seems important. It's illuminated. It's alive. Then the soul leaves, and that body is just plunged into darkness. It becomes useless. And then the soul lights up another body, just like the sun, first lighting up the eastern horizon, then moving, lighting up the western horizon. Has the sun changed? No, the sun is always full in its glory. But due to your perception, you think, oh, now the sun is gone. The sun is different. A fool will think every time the sun rises in the morning that it's a new sun. A new living entity, in other words. But one whose eyes have knowledge knows that it's the same old sun taking a different appearance. In other words, appearing in a different day. Similarly, the soul appears in different bodies, but it's the same soul. Of course, when the sun, Balarami gets very intricate now, when the sun is shining on a particular area, there's all sorts of actions and reactions that happen in that area, which go on even when the sun leaves. Similarly, when the soul appears in one body and then leaves it, although the soul is gone from that body, there are all sorts of actions and reactions remaining. Then Balaram explained about the moon. The moon looks like it's always changing. It's growing, it's shrinking. When there's a new moon, we say like that, new moon. But actually, it's the same old moon. It's just our perception that makes it seem like the moon's changing. Similarly, the living entity, as spirit soul, is always the same. But due to material conditioning, we look at it, or we perceive that we have different personalities in different situations, in different bodies, in different lives. But actually, the same spirit soul is there in its glory. So these are very relevant instructions from Lord Balaram to Rukmini Devi. She was playing the part of being an illusion. The Bhagavatam describes that she was even depressed. But when she heard Lord Balaram's words, then she forgot all about the situation. And so that was the end of that. Rukmi, he had vowed never to go back to his city of Kundina, unless he had killed Krishna, and he was going to bring back Rukmini. He had told the citizens, I'm never coming back unless I do that. So he couldn't go back. So he just built the city where he was and never went back. So, these things are very valuable lessons on our path back to Godhead. Any questions?
Krishna said to Arjuna that not only am I
That was Prabhupada's example. Krishna did not tell Arjuna, okay, the battle's already won, now you can lay in the back of the chariot and go to sleep. So? I'll give you one thing Prabhupada said. He was once very disappointed by the behavior of some of his leaders. This is a missionary effort. It's a war with Maya. Sometimes there are casualties. Like I was explaining to someone here how even someone who falls victim, doesn't follow the doctor's orders, doesn't take the medicine and gets sick again, still, while that person was part of the hospital staff, that person did a lot of good. You can't overlook that. It was all bad. No, just that the person fell victim. Was inattentive, did not follow the doctor's prescription, and so falls into Maya. But still, Prabhupada's mission on behalf of Lord Krishna is so great that even us uncivilized Westerners can have great use. And even if someone comes and then goes away, still, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, they get the chance to do extraordinary things on behalf of Krishna. So, Prabhupada, he was feeling transcendently disappointed. We can't imagine the austerity Srila Prabhupada went through trying to teach even material civilization to the savages, in the West. The more advanced you become in Krishna consciousness, the more you realize how wild and animalistic the world is. So, he was feeling disappointed, so he just wrote the person, I'm hearing this and that about you. You can imagine how disappointed I feel. But I know Lord Chaitanya will send me the right persons to spread Krishna consciousness. If not you, somebody else. So two things were there simultaneously. His sincere disappointment with his disciple, at the same time, his firm conviction in Krishna. I know Lord Chaitanya is going to send me the right person. Okay, I wanted you to be a leading part. You're not doing? That's all right. Krishna will send me someone else. That was the kind of determination Prabhupada had. So yes, Krishna wants the job to be done. It will be done. Now the question is, who's going to get the credit? Will we be able to participate in this glorious work of the Lord? Or will someone else get the credit? So we should be greedy. I want to get the credit. I want to please Krishna by helping. So yes, the battle is already won. Krishna consciousness will spread. But what are we going to do? Will we be able to participate in it? That is the question. Lord Chaitanya is willing to give us all a chance to render service in this greatest welfare work, this greatest love. But what are we going to do about it? That is the question. It comes down to the individual. Just like Battle of Kurukshetra and Bhagavad Gita came down to the individual. Arjuna, what are you going to do? He said, I surrender. Whatever Krishna wants, I will do. I will act. I will act according to his instruction. That's Bhagavad Gita. What will we do as individuals? Anything else? Yes.
I just thought you were talking about the type of balance between artificial renunciation and the other side. Certainly, sometimes it seems hard to find the balance between making plans to do things on behalf of Krishna and at the same time understanding Krishna's doing.
In order to give pleasure to the Lord, you have to make plans to the best of your ability. And the best of your ability means as far as your intelligence goes and as far as the intelligence of those you're supposed to consult goes, and then you act. But then you have to be ready that maybe things don't turn out the way you want it. And then you just don't say, well, thy will be done. You try to actually find out what is the will of Krishna. That's the point of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna just didn't say, I'm not fighting, I'm not doing anything. Krishna, your will can happen. Thy will be done. I'm heading home. Service is over. I'm going home. Thy will be done. All glories, thy will. No. Arjuna fought. He took up his role in the will of the Lord. So, we always have to try to understand what the plan of Krishna is, and that's why hearing about Krishna is so important. And we always have to be ready to be advised and guided. You just do the best you can. No need to be in anxiety. We have so many things that need to be done on behalf of Krishna. No need to kind of, you know, give yourself unnecessary anxiety. How do I know if my plan is right? According to our best faculties, we act for Krishna. And our best faculties means we take help from our spiritual master, we take help from the senior Vaishnavas, we take help from the temple management. If you act that way, in that way, Krishna will certainly help you. Anything else? All glory to Srila Prabhupada.